One other quick aside.
Yeah.
This is how you know that this station, at least right now in this moment, because we have plenty of females who work here, but right now this is four dudes. It's me, it's you, it's Grandy, and it's Ken. And everybody knows that dudes don't necessarily plan everything out all the time. And so I'm going to ask the guys now here live on the air, who went through the very obvious possible scenario of the Warriors showing up right when Greg Cosell is on in 14 minutes? Because it's definitely happening, and I'd like to know what plan B is.
Yeah, that's a great question.
That counts. That actually counts.
So you're saying nobody thought of that?
Ever since they hadn't been here at 45, my mind has been, what happens if...
Hey, Quentin Post, would you like to ask Greg Cosell about the wide nine?
Greg, I noticed the Chiefs do a lot of 13 personnel. How does that jibe with the Niners playing a lot of nickel defense?
Hey, Greg, have you broken down any Warriors tape in the last few months, and would you like to suggest Draymond at the four or the five?
That's a great question.
Interesting thing about Greg Cosell is he is a classic rock aficionado, so I wonder if he might be able to look at the tape of the Quentin Post singing of Don't Stop Believin'.
Well, we got a little bit of that too.
And where that ranks on, you know, like Journey for Greg Cosell, where do they rank on your classic rock? Journey's not really classic rock. Yeah, they kind of are.
Yeah, they're adjacent.
That song's a pop song. Earlier Journey, I think, is a little bit more of a rock experience, but I think Greg leans a little bit more toward the heavier stuff.
I'm not done trying to make you mad.
You can try. You're not going to get there. What a great mood today.
This is from the Morning Roast, and I'll tell you after who's saying it.
This is a must-win for the 49ers, in my opinion. And if I'm in that locker room, that's how I'm feeling, because like you just said, we lost to these guys in two of the biggest games, you know, two times in the biggest games of the season, and now we have an opportunity to play them in our backyard. You don't know when you have an opportunity to play the team that you lost in the Super Bowl, because we're in different, you know, conferences, but yes, this is a huge game. You know, the 49ers are now starting to get into their groove. We all know how they like to start the seasons over the past years, which has been kind of slow. You know, midway through the second quarter of the season, that's when the guys and Kyle Shanahan get the team, you know, rolling with the confidence and playing with the aspiration that, you know, everybody was hoping that they start the season with. So this is definitely a must-win for the 49ers. If they don't win, the season's not over. But for them losing to the Kansas City Chiefs twice in the Super Bowl game, I'm definitely feeling that this is a must-win.
Okay, Patrick Peterson in 58 seconds, three times.
Right.
The must-win.
Right, and he also said, if they don't win, the season's not over. So I would have come back at Patrick and said, well, Patrick, if they don't win and the season's not over, is it really a must-win? And I would like you to elaborate on what makes you think, like, what part of this is the must part of it? Because it's not the standings. It's not the life and longevity of the franchise. Because if you lose, you still get to play next week, right? And they're allowed to beat Dallas.
Yeah,
they're still allowed to be a playoff team.
Sure, but that's sort of like that, in my opinion, that at times is overstating it or simplifying it a little bit too much. Like, you can call it a must win, and it doesn't necessarily have to be directed to the idea of the season ends if you don't win. That's very mathematical, and you're not wrong. So if that's how you want to look at the phrase must win, I think what he's talking about, because he did expand on it, is he's talking about the mentality of these players and that this is a devastating blow if they can't beat these guys. And so from that perspective, I do think, while I'm with you 99% of the time, because I'm not real big on that phrase either.
It's but just that's, lazy.
But
is
that's
what it
me.
Is.
Well, I don't think so. From the perspective,
well, it's my opinion, it's lazy.
That's fine. But I think from and it's my opinion that it's not. So you listen to what Patrick said, and I get what he's saying. This is and I agree from this. This is the word that I would use. This is a devastating blow if they lose. That's how I feel.
Yeah, he said it was a huge game, and I do think that it's a huge game. It's a big game, but you may not face Kansas City again. This may be the only time that these players face Kansas City. You could lose this game. Kansas City could make the playoffs. You can too. Kansas City loses too. Fill in the blank. You don't. You go to the Super Bowl and you take on whoever you take on. And then this game isn't a must win. It's not a devastating blow. It's not a huge game. If you go out there and win every other game between now and February, we would look back at this game and think, well, you know what? That was a wake-up call game.
Yeah, but that's obviously that's a very big if, and secondly, it's not.
It depends on how you approach
it. But it's not living in this moment. Like, we're here now, and he's talking about this moment. Like, I wonder if you buy this. This just came in on the Comcast business text line. And thank you very much. We love it when you interact with the show. So you can text. You can hang out on YouTube and Twitch. We will take your calls. 888-957-9570. Greg Cosell. And he swaggers in here in about 8 minutes. 510 says, I think it is a must win. Psychologically, Dibs, there is a difference, buddy. If they lose this weekend, they'll feel like they can never beat the Chiefs.
See, that's somebody on the text line projecting their own feelings into the feelings of a player. And if the players actually feel that, then I weep for those individuals and I weep for the coaching staff that has not coached them to the spot where they understand the perspective of this game and any other game. If you lose to Kansas City and you are that psychologically devastated by a loss to Kansas City, then you're weak-minded. And that's a coaching point. That's a franchise point. That's an individual point. It's organizational. That, to me, is weakness. If you fall to 3-4 and you lose to Kansas City and your takeaway is, well, we can't beat the Chiefs.
Well, I think
What are we doing?
Well, to me,
you're pro athletes.
Your take is
you've got to go out there and fight.
That's a little black and white. I don't think that's what the texter is saying. I don't think that the 49ers would openly walk out and say that in a microphone, and I don't even think they would openly say it into
a
mirror.
That's what the texter is projecting into their psychology. That's what I'm hearing.
But psychology is so much more it's so much more complex than that. So, in other words, I mean, this is why so many people go to therapy, right? You got stuff going on in you that you can't access. You wouldn't say it. Anytime somebody looks at you and goes, I'm fine, I'd argue 99% of the time, no, you're not. So, in other words, the Niners will not sit there and say, even to themselves, damn it, we can't beat the Chiefs. But it's in there. It's in there. And I already feel it for them with listening to the way they've talked this week. Again, this isn't my opinion. You're right. How the hell can I tell you how Fred Warner feels? But listen to Fred. And if Fred is going to find a microphone and go, dude, I've been playing football for a while now, and I've never beat this guy. I got to beat this guy. And then you have them come to your place at a time where you are the more desperate team. I don't know who's healthier. They're both banged up. But especially as a defender, I would look at this team and go, it's not like you have a whole lot to offer right now. Like, you have Patrick Mahomes. He's amazing. But there's not weapons running around all over the place that scare the living hell out of you. There's a run game where they grabbed someone off the street 2 weeks ago and he's playing. So, like, if I'm Fred Warner, I'm like, dude, if we can't beat you Sunday, somewhere the seed of doubt gets planted in your DNA, whether you admit it or not.
Well, that's weakness.
I don't think so. That's humanity. That's right. Being a human being.
But also being a human being is being able to compartmentalize. And you come in here every day 2 to 6, and I come in here every day 2 to 6, and what you bring from 2 to 6 is probably different than what you do from 6 p.m. to 2 p.m. the next day. I know it is for me. What I'm doing in my life, what you do in your life, is totally different. You and I come in here for 4 hours, and our job is to do a show. And if we can't compartmentalize and put aside all of the poopy diapers and then this and that and what you've got 3 kids and a bunch of problems. I got the same. I've got a wife. You have a girlfriend. You have 4 jobs. I got a bad knee. All the different things that we have, when we get on the mic, our job is to do the best damn show we can do. So it's the same thing
sure.
in a much bigger way that they're trying to do. And if you're feeling like, you know, when you line up and you look across the line and you see Patrick Mahomes and there are kernels within you thinking, man, I haven't beaten him. Geez, I don't know if I'm going to be able to spy the quarterback because he's really good and I haven't been able to beat him.
I'm not saying that they won't, that they'll lose the ability to function. They'll have the ability to compartmentalize. It also doesn't mean it's not in there and that it's not affecting them. All those things that you just said that we are dealing with outside of our show, they come to our show.
Of course.
We don't want them to, but they do. They do. They have. You know that.
Oh,
we
yeah.
see that. It happens all the time.
Every show.
It happens to everybody in all walks of life, and the 49ers are that too. So that's all I'm agreeing with. I'm not saying they can't function. I'm not saying they can't win the Super Bowl. I'm saying it makes it harder, and I'm saying that they will carry that with them, and that is a negative. That is a net negative. I absolutely believe that success this year is less likely. It's not over. I don't know if anything's ever 0%, but it's not over. But it's less likely if they lose this weekend and not for mathematical standings reasons.
For me, it depends on how it goes. And so far, what we've seen this year, as far as scars go, the scars that they've suffered are fourth quarter blown leads. Now, if Kansas City comes in here and beats you 36-9, now we're having a different conversation. But if you have a game where you lead again in the fourth quarter and you blow the lead again to Kansas City, well, then for me, it's not so much about Kansas City as it is about you.
The 510 who sent that text says he wants to call in and explain what he's saying to you.
He won't.
But yeah, to do it.
They
do it.
Won't.
Don't text it. Do it. Greg Cosell.
957-957.
And Greg Cosell's going to he's gonna explain what he's thinking to Dibs, too. That's coming up next.
Oh, boy.
And then the Warriors are going to come in here at some point. Don't miss a special extended edition of the Kickoff Show this Sunday. Loneal, Evan Giddings, 10 a.m. before the start of the game at 1:25. Okay? Big, long show. Join us at the Hilton Santa Clara Delicious food, great drinks, and as you know, the best pregame show the Bay has to offer. It's presented by Habas Law. You've been wronged. Habas Law will fight to make it right. Call 1-800-INJURED or visit HabasLaw.com. This is Willard and Dibs.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Now, back to
Willard and Libs
on 95.7 The Game.
All right. We'll throw a little bit of a curveball at you, but not the one that you're worried about, because Greg Cosell doesn't even know the anticipation sensation that is taking place right now.
Oh, boy. I'm nervous.
And so the senior producer of NFL Films is here and is standing by on the River Islands guest line.
He's here?
Yeah, he's here right now.
And he's him.
Now, the Warrior thing, we're going to tell you about in a little bit. We'll tell you about that in a little bit. And again, Jeff Schwartz, former chief, current Fox analyst, and Bay Area guy, and former Duck, Grandy loves that, he joins us in an hour, okay? So that's what's around the corner. We're streaming live on Twitch and YouTube, so if you want to look at Dibs Shake, twitch.tv/957 The Game, youtube.com/957thegame. It's all powered by First NorCal Credit Union. Hello, Greg Cosell. How are you?
I'm doing great. Is there a big game this weekend?
Well, we heard about one. Yeah. And actually, why don't we go there? Like, what do you gather on film from previous matchups that you think is applicable to this one?
Well, I would answer that by saying that coaches tend to coach against coaches. That's the way the league works. The most important people on the side of a ball are the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator. Now, obviously, there are certain players that always have to be accounted for, but these are two, like, let's say you're looking at Kyle Shanahan and his offense versus Spags and his defense. You pretty much know what you're going to get. Now, are there tweaks? Are there little adjustments? Yes. But there's not going to be dramatic changes in how these two coaches coach against each other. So, you know, that's kind of the way it works in the league. You don't win games because you do things that are gimmicky, or you totally change how you go about the way you play. I mean, this is a tough match. You could argue it's a tough matchup on both sides.
Yeah, I get that. So if it is sort of the tendencies of one coach against the tendencies of another coach, sort of I guess I would take that answer and then apply it to the games that we've seen recently. Like, who kind of did what that was effective as far as that scheme and game planning in recent matchups?
Well, Spags is a press man guy. He wants his corners to play press. If you remember in the Super Bowl, they did that effectively. Now, he had one of the two or three best press corners in the league in L'Jarius Sneed, who's not there. Now, he will still play press because that's his belief. But Sneed is one of the best in the league, so you're playing probably with a lesser talent at the position, but that won't change how he plays. He's very selective, but extremely effective with his pressure concepts. He's really good with overload concepts, and sometimes he'll show an overload to one side and you protect to that side, but then he brings the overload from the other side. So situationally, you have to be very aware of specific pressures. He uses his defensive backs as well as anybody in the NFL in his pressure schemes, both corners and safeties. He has someone who's kind of a new player this year. He was on the team last year and did play, but he's become critical this year, number 27, Chamari Connor, who's a really, really important piece, particularly in their dime, their six defensive back package. He's a really good blitzer.
How does this match up with Brock Purdy and the Niners offense as far as going up against man concepts? Has Brock been effective going up against man?
Well, it's not so much Brock. When you're playing against man, then your receivers have to give you a place to throw the football, because quarterbacks have to throw the football versus man coverage. If your receivers can't give you a place to throw the ball, you don't need a new quarterback. You need new receivers. That's kind of the way man coverage works. So now it also comes down to the tactics and the schematics you use to attack man coverage. There's ways to do that. You can do stacks. You can do bunch. You can do motion, of which the Niners are a high percentage motion team. There's ways to try to create free access off the ball so that press man does not inhibit your ability to run your pass game.
Greg Cosell with us, Willard and Dibbs, as he is every single week, normally on Wednesday with our special event yesterday. We're doing it today as we get ready for the weekend. So, Greg, a lot of talk about the aggressiveness and the blitzing nature from Steve Spagnuolo, who was talking earlier today about how well Brock Purdy does against the blitz. So I'd love your insight on that. Like, what does Spagnuolo usually like to do with the blitz? And what do you usually see Brock Purdy do in terms of the way he handles that?
Yeah, well, we just talked a little bit about how Spags loves to use his DBs, and you have to be aware of that. And I think one reason why Purdy is good against the blitz is because he is really good both pre-snap and post-snap at recognizing what's going on. One of the things that has so stood out in his career and that you didn't really see in college, because the college game is not like that, is his ability to recognize disguise and late coverage rotation. He recognizes it intuitively, and he knows exactly where to go with the ball. So normally, and he's done this a little more the last couple of weeks, and I'm very curious in this game, normally you don't see Brock Purdy get stuck in the pocket, but the last couple of weeks, he has. And I would have to be in his head to know the answer to that, and that's why we've seen him run a little more and scramble a little more the last couple of weeks instead of delivering the football. This is a game, to me, where he's going to have to hit that back foot and deliver the football. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be any plays in which he moves, but I don't think that can be the way in which he plays.
Yeah, and that's going to be something that he's had to adjust to. He's done a lot of scrambling this year, and I'm wondering about the other side and the Kansas City offense, Greg, because I look at a team that is markedly different than they were a few years ago, doing a lot of two and three tight end sets. Is this a byproduct of what you see on film of personnel, or is it just something that they've gone to because they have good tight ends?
Well, the Chiefs have been a very high percentage of multiple tight end offense going back probably 2 years. So this might be the third year in which they're doing that. So this is not something, you know, that they've just started a week or so ago. This is the way they play. And because of Kelce, who essentially, in the way he can be deployed within the formation, he's essentially a wide receiver. So they do play a lot with two tight ends and three tight ends. So the question is, because they've become much more of a running team over the last, really going back to last year, is how do you deploy your personnel defensively to defend that? Do you play base, in which case, you know, you're playing essentially to play the run game, or do you play nickel because the pass game is still your most important concern, and this way you might have some deficiencies in your run defense.
Greg, you've expressed on our show the last few weeks some intrigue in Renardo Green. So before we get too deep into Chiefs Niners, I don't want to forget the game that was a week ago and get your reaction on some of those performances. The youth in the secondary for the 49ers, Malik Mustafa Green with the wonderful interception that kind of clinched the game.
Yeah, it was a great play.
Yeah, what did you see on film from those players?
I would say that the safety from Wake Forest, Mustafa, he's at his best when he can be closer to the line of scrimmage or play downhill. He's probably not a true deep safety as a post safety, which they asked Hufanga to do that quite a bit, particularly when they played man coverage, because obviously they don't have Gibson anymore, but when they played cover one man coverage with a deep safety, Gibson was almost always the tight end matchup against 11 personnel, three wide receivers and a tight end, and Hufanga was the post safety. I'm not sure Mustafa is quite ready to fill that role, so it'll be interesting to see what they do. But Green, I think Green played well. I like Green. They don't play a ton of press man, but I thought he held up really, really well. I didn't think there was a problem with him at all. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I guess is Ward going to play this week?
They're hoping, yeah.
Yeah,
he's trending that way.
It's trending that way, but yeah, we don't have anything official yet.
Yeah, I mean, his interception, I actually thought that Metcalf kind of angled his route too far vertically, and he shouldn't have, but Green still undercut it and made a great play.
And you look at this matchup, as you mentioned, two tight ends and even three at times, and the 49ers with one good linebacker, and then Devondre Campbell better against the run than he is against the pass. Would you anticipate the Niners going to more nickel coverage to try to offset the linebackers not having an advantage against the Chiefs tight ends?
Well, that's going to be interesting. I mean, that's a decision that Nick Sorensen and staff have to make, is how they want to play against multiple tight ends. Will they play in their base and put Flanagan Foles out there? Will they stay nickel and it just be Warner and Campbell? You know, that becomes the starting point for how you play, because you do different things tactically when you play in your base, 4-3, versus when you play in your 4-2 nickel. So that's the starting point. I can't answer what they will do, but they're going to have, in their mind, an answer for that. And some of that depends on down and distance. Some of it depends on field location. Some of it depends on how the game is flowing. You know, there's many factors that go into how you decide to play.
You've been impressed this year with Jordan Mason. He is practicing this week, but in a non-contact jersey. So the popular thought is at best, he's going to be out there, but we are going to see some of Isaac Guerrero, who popped in that game a week ago. I wonder what you saw from Isaac on film and what your reaction was.
Yeah, Isaac is kind of a a one to me, he's kind of a downhill back. You know, he's incredibly fast, straight line. He's not particularly loose hipped and shifty. In some ways, he's a lesser case Mason in terms of how he runs. Mason is shiftier, but you wouldn't call Mason extremely shifty, where Guerrero is even less so. He's a little stiff, but he's very fast. You know, to me, he's kind of a probably a zone type runner. You want to get him with that one cut, let him go, and hopefully he can hit the hole. You know, he's got really good size, but, you know, I think one reason he was drafted where he was, and he started at Wisconsin, and then he ended at Louisville, and he never truly became a feature back in college, is because there are limitations to him, even though he's straight line fast.
The Chiefs very good against the run. What do you see from their front seven that makes it so difficult to run against them?
Good players.
That helps, huh?
Yeah. Well, we know about Chris Jones, but they've got a lot of other good players on that defensive front. You know, obviously everybody's going to talk about Chris Jones, and deservedly so, but not as a really good run defender. They've gotten really good snaps from Tershawn Wharton. Michael Dana is I can tell you for a fact that he's one of Spag's favorite players. Drew Tranquil is a really good player. We know about Nick Bolton. You know, Bolton and Jones are probably the guys that most people know about. Leo Chenal, another Wisconsin player, is really versatile in how he can be deployed. So they've got a lot of really good pieces in that front group and versatile players who can do a lot of things. So it's a combination of good players really schemed well.
Greg, this might sound like a silly person to ask about, but I would love your perspective, because for those who just kind of scan the league, you're looking at Patrick Mahomes' stats, and they don't like stack up to what he used to do. And this team is a little bit more based on its defense than it used to be early in his career.
And the run game.
Yeah, so like, just what is your assessment of the evolution of Mahomes? Is he still playing as well, or how is it different?
Well, every year is a different year, and we're not going to debate whether Mahomes is great. He's got three Super Bowls,
right.
So that's not the point of what I'm going to say, but every year is different. So right now, through the early part of this season, the Chiefs' passing game has lacked any kind of real rhythmic feel to it. You see very few plays in which Mahomes hits his plant foot and delivers the ball with a sense of timing. That's been an issue throughout the season. Mahomes has really not been a comfortable player. Now, some people will automatically say that's a function of the receivers. It could be. We're not in his head. But there are plays in every game in which Mahomes breaks down in the pocket prematurely and moves unnecessarily. But we know that off-schedule movement with outstanding vision is a definite strength of his game. So he's always dangerous. But he hasn't really played consistent football this year. I mean, there was a play in the last game that they played, because they're coming off a bye, where he had Worthy wide open on a deep over route on third down, and he looked right at him from a clean pocket, didn't throw it, and ended up leaving the pocket, and then he ran for 7 yards and a first down. So I don't know how the coaching staff deals with that. They probably say, good play, Patrick. But it would have been a long touchdown to Worthy if he had just thrown the ball. So, you know, that's where his game is right now. And again, people listening to this, you know, they're going to say, well, you don't like Mahomes. No, we know what Mahomes is. You know, he's a great player. But this is a different year, and he's not playing to his level right now.
And we actually saw Mahomes line up as a tailback when you went to a pistol look with Travis Kelce getting the snap and running a little read option to Xavier Worthy.
Yeah, Andy does all that kind of stuff. But just as a final point about Mahomes, he can be great, and he could come out this week and be phenomenal. We know that. You know, he's always dangerous. He could be phenomenal. Maybe this will be the best game of his season, and he goes 30 for 40 for 450, and, you know, he's great. You know, he's obviously capable of that any given week. But I'm just telling you what the tape has shown this year up to this point.
And you look at the tape, and what you see, Greg, is it that they don't really need him to be phenomenal this year because of the way that they're scheming up a lot of passes near or behind the line of scrimmage?
Yeah, they are. They throw a lot of balls near and near. You've hit that right on the head. They haven't really had any kind of consistent intermediate passing game. Vertical is different because, you know, you can't live or die with deep down the field throws. But they really haven't had kind of a short to intermediate passing game with any consistency this year. They've really become a running team to some degree. I mean, in some ways, and this is a weird thing to say, and Mahomes is certainly not going to, you know, he doesn't really hurt you, obviously, but they've become a running team and a team built on defense. And as long as Mahomes can be efficient, if not great, they're a really good football team. Their defense is really good.
Yeah, no doubt about that. You've mentioned a few times about like this sort of renewed focus on the run game, which is interesting because they don't have their lead running back. And Kareem Hunt wasn't even playing 3 weeks ago, and now he's their lead back. What do you see from him on film specifically compared to who he used to be?
Well, he's kind of the same guy. He's a very physical inside runner. He gets hard yards. The last game they played when he was 27 for 105 was very representative of that. He gets hard, tough yards inside. He's not an explosive back. I mean, obviously, if he gets a big hole, sure. But, I mean, in terms of just his normal way of running, he's not necessarily explosive. But he's physical. He's tough. You know, runs that are blocked for three, he gets six or seven. That's the kind of runner he is, and that allows them to stay on schedule and makes it tougher on defenses.
When you look at the Niners on film defensively against the run, looked like they were improved against Seattle last weekend. Are you seeing the scheme and the personnel start to match up where this defense is starting to play better?
Yeah, so I mean, it's always hard for me to discuss the specifics of a scheme because essentially, a four down front, and I know that every coach has specific tweaks and specific things that they ask of their players, which obviously I don't know. I'm not in their meetings, but they do have good people up front. I think Givens has really come in and done a very nice job as replacing Hargrave, and we know about the other players, so it's just. I would say that the Chiefs' O-line, particularly the three interior guys, can be very, very good any given week. The center, Humphrey's really good. Then the two guards, Thuney and Trey Smith. Thuney is getting up there in age, and he's not what he was 3 or 4 years ago. But Trey Smith, particularly in the run game, can be absolutely dominant. I got a chance to meet and talk with him this summer, actually. And he's a big man who does not look the least bit heavy. I mean, he looks like a freaking athlete.
Greg Cosell with us every single week right here on Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game. Greg, because you just brought up the name Hargrave, I want to sort of pass along a question that I think a lot of our listeners and 49ers fans have, because Hargrave is known for an interior lineman as being better against the pass than the rush.
That's correct.
Okay, so with him out, they suddenly had a really good game kind of bottling up Kenneth Walker, and so people are like, gosh, did the Niners just get better against the run because he's out? How would you respond to a fan who says that?
I would respond with the fact that the interior three of the Seahawks are way below the quality of the interior three of the Chiefs, which doesn't mean that the 49ers can't play the run well this week, but they're playing against a different animal this week. So we almost have to wait and see. They're going to have to stop the run, but using the last game as a foundation or basis for what we think might happen this week is not really realistic. Those three interior guys for the Chiefs that I mentioned, Thuney, Humphrey, and Smith, are far better than the interior three of the Seahawks.
And similarly, you look at the tackles of the Chiefs, and that seems to be a point of vulnerability, and you saw Nick Bosa last week move from side to side and rush on the right tackle and the left tackle. Would you expect, having seen the film last week, that Nick Bosa might be able to feast a little bit against these two tackles?
Yeah, I would expect to see him. Again, nothing's 100%, right, but I would expect to see him at right defensive end a bit in this game, working against Wanya Morris, the left tackle, the second-year left tackle for the Chiefs, who's won that job over the rookie. They were starting a rookie from BYU, Sumatea, but now Wanya Morris, who's very, very physically gifted, by the way, but there's still a lot of concerns with his pass protection, and he's the starting left tackle now for the Chiefs. So I would expect to see Bosa get some opportunity against him.
Greg, you mentioned mentioned earlier that the Chiefs had success in the Super Bowl with their press coverage, but they had Snead and they don't have him anymore. In general, from the 49ers receivers, historically on tape, how do they handle that kind of coverage, what Spagnuolo loves to do?
I think it's probably up and down. You know, press is hard. Not every team does it, and not every team does it well, so you don't necessarily see it every single week. The Chiefs are masters at it. It's what Spags believes in. I mean, I can remember plays in the Super Bowl, critical plays, where they pressed really effectively, and it impacted in a negative way the passing game. So now you have to decide, if you're Kyle, you know this. So now how do you put together your offense? Now, are there going to be some plays where you just have to line up and play and your guy has to win? There's always those plays in games. But there's also tactics, as we spoke about earlier in this conversation, that you can use to minimize the impact of that press coverage.
When you look at the Niners receivers between Juwan Jennings and Debo and Brandon Ayuk, who is the best man beater of the trio?
That's a great question. That's a tough one. I mean, you know, I've seen Ayuk, you know, win off the ball numerous times because he's got some quickness and some lateral quickness to him. Debo is more physical, and Jennings is more physical, so they're different players. I mean, I can remember in the Super Bowl where Snead matched up to Samuel in some critical situations, and he did a really good job against him in press. So, you know, press sometimes can be hard. We'll see. But they're going to get it. The question now, that is one of the critical pieces in this game.
Greg, Steve Spagnuolo earlier today said he can't find a weakness in Brock Purdy. We know coaches always praise the opposing players. I wonder how you would answer that. What do you see? Do you see any weaknesses, or what is the weakest part of Brock Purdy's game?
I would say, in a strict sense, there's not a glaring weakness to Brock Purdy's game. I would say that, you know, obviously there are times on certain throws, if he has to just sit on his back foot in the pocket, like the touchdown he threw to Samuel against the Seahawks, the long one, he had to kind of sit on his back foot and throw it late, and that ball hung up a little. You know, he's not a power thrower, but normally the nature of this offense doesn't ask him to make those kinds of throws. The offense is so timing based. So does he have a weakness in a strict sense? No, he does not have a weakness in a strict sense, but he's not a power thrower. So sometimes, on occasion, a deeper ball might hang a little bit.
Greg, just phenomenal stuff. And with the size of this game on Sunday, we are already looking forward to 6 days from now and breaking it down with you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much.
There he goes. Now, the first thing I'm going to say is that, because this is a big moment on this show now.
Big.
All right. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. I don't know if I've ever seen a better comeback victory in all of my years of watching sports.
Thank you.
I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that in my life. I mean, it started subtly where he complimented an observation. For you to get a pause and then a great question, followed by a tough question.
Yeah, boy.
All within 5 seconds of each other, had to be one of the highlights of your career.
No doubt. 27 years in, and that is in the top 10. It might be on the Rushmore. And you saw me in real time. There were tears.
I didn't see you in real time because I was freaking out. I was shaking over here. And I had nothing to do with it.
This may be my finest hour as an amateur analyst.
You just did what the Niners need to do.
Big time.
Step into a big moment and freaking perform.
Let's go.
All right. By the way, you want to hear what Spagnuolo said about Purdy?
Sure.
It's pretty freaking interesting.
I'm on like cloud 30 right now.
You don't care. You want to do the rest of the show by yourself?
Kinda.
All right. I'm out. Willard and Dibs.
When you look at the Niners receivers between Juwan Jennings and Debo and Brandon Ayuk, who is the best man beater of the trio?
That's a great question. That's a tough one. I mean,
now back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
I don't know where to start.
Woohoo! Yeah. Yeah, baby. It's a celebration.
Our listeners don't know this. You don't have the Comcast business text line in front of you.
I don't, no.
I do.
Yeah, I'm allergic to it.
If you could see what this looks like, you would cry. You would cry. I have never seen more texts come in about one subject. Can I read some of these to you?
Please.
510, Cosell versus Dibley, championship bout. 510, right on the head, Dibs. 510, yay, Dibs. 831, Dibs with the win. 415, yes, Dibberzilla. 530, it's a redemption sensation. I hate when people do it with words.
It's a good effort.
It's good. Gosh. You know, I mean.
It was a reclamation sensation.
Thank you. That's how you do it, but we appreciate
thank you.
Your text. 925, Dibs handled him today. Awesome. Love it. 510, I'm so proud of you, Uncle D. Another 510, attaboy, Dibs. Another 510, congrats, Dibs. That was effing unbelievable. What champions are made of right there. Yeah.
Last week took an L, but today I bounced back.
One more, 510, Cosell must be doing more than watching film. What a master ego-stroking job. Was it Memorex or was it Patron? X, go Dibs.
Patron. Shout out Patron. Patron, I mean, Silver. Patron, yeah, Silver.
Whatever you want. It's all the same. You get drunk.
I'm not surprised at that outpouring because on my own phone, I got three texts, including one from my knee surgeon.
Your knee surgeon?
Dr. Krinsky. Shout out Mickey, former Warrior doctor.
Uh-huh.
He just texted me with an attaboy. So,
okay.
A lot of people were... Or I think people tuning in to watch me go up in flames again, but it's an upset.
We just got two more came in that are fun. 650, does Dibs have a 510 phone number? Were you sending those texts?
No, I'm 415.
Okay.
I have the same number that I had when I lived in the city in 99.
And then a different 510, which is active, said, let me read this, go to hell, Dibs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Must be low.
All right. I remember when the Raiders.
Go to hell, Dibs.
I remember when the Raiders upset the Ravens earlier this year. That was one of my survivor pools that went.
Oh man!
Remember the Raiders in the fourth quarter, down by 10, come back. They beat the Baltimore Ravens. You remember that?
Yeah.
This was a bigger upset than that.
Man, I feel like Joe Willie Namath in Super Bowl III. Which was a big upset.
You know what we should do, because there are people listening that are like, "What the hell is this all about?" So Greg Cosell, executive producer of NFL Films, he comes on with us every Wednesday. I know today's not Wednesday. We were doing the Madden event yesterday, so we pushed it to Thursday. 8 days ago, Greg Cosell came on our show, and I don't know, it organically just went a certain way. You started firing questions, and he didn't like them. And so he started sunning you. Like, at times, he wouldn't even let you finish.
At times?
For those of you who didn't hear it and therefore don't have the background, the guys here at the station put together a little thingamabob to summarize what happened just 8 days ago.
You know, it was a blitz on that play, and Campbell came in.
They blitzed on third and fourth down.
They did.
On both those plays, yeah. They were aggressive with pressure.
Zone read, and you see Bosa crash immediately toward Connor, and Murray pulls it, and he's got, you know, after 5 yards, he's already pointing to the heavens because he's virtually untouched.
Well, it's not zone read. It's not a zone read. It's a quarterback sweep.
Tomorrow they're going to Seattle to take on a Mike McDonald team, and he was the defensive coordinator in Baltimore last year who gave the Niners all kinds of fits.
Actually, he didn't. Mm-hmm. That game, they marched up and down the field in the first half. They went through that defense without a problem at all.
No, five picks would tell me that they did something right, at least, to be able to get five picks from the 49ers.
I think it was three, was it not?
It was four off Brock, and then Sammy D came in and threw a fifth.
We don't care about that.
Brock Purdy has dropped back 185 times this year and has had three tipped balls. So it's not really a conversation.
It's about 2%, Greg, based on my rudimentary
math. I don't really think that's a conversation.
Yeah, nor do I. And I just was thinking about Baltimore last year and the fact that I think they had two tip ball interceptions, one at the line, one which was further down the field. Yeah, and
those are fluky plays.
Oh, man.
That's what it sounded like last week.
Oh, God.
And so there was a lot of nervousness in the room.
You think?
For you.
For sure.
Yeah, you did the darn thing.
Well,
you did it.
And there was one early in the interview today where he jumped me again, but it wasn't.
He jumped the route. It was press man.
He jumped the route, but it was just a pass breakup. It wasn't a pick or a pick six. Last week was, I mean, you heard all five of those where
we don't care about that.
No, this week was.
It's a fluke.
It was a bounce back. Yeah, we don't care about that. It was a fluke. Yeah. Yeah, they blitzed. They also blitzed on third down.
I mean,
yeah, they did, Greg.
I thought it would go better. I didn't think that the two of you were going to be dating by the end of it, but that's what it sounded like this time.
Nor did I.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
all right.
It's tough.
Good for you.
I'm happy.
GFY.
Thank you. GFY.
Good for you.
That's what it stands
for. You.
Last week, GFY stood for something totally different. But yeah, you know, we'll see come Wednesday.
Oh, gosh.
When I watch the game a second time and I come in with notes and he shoots me down again, you just never know what happens.
You don't know. No. And maybe it's a, look, maybe it's just a Thursday thing. Maybe he's like me and he thinks Thursday is the best day of the week.
It could be.
And he's in a way better mood. We'll find out next week. We're going to talk to him on Wednesday.
Best day of the week.
Yeah, and if he hates you again next Wednesday, then you can go to Matt and see if we can move Greg Cosell to Thursdays.
Yep.
And or you could be a big boy and see if you can do this on a Wednesday. I don't know.
I can handle it.
We'll find it. We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know if you can.
Coming up in 6 days.
You and Cosell on a Wednesday is like the Niners and the Chiefs. Got to do it before I tell you can
like
do it. Let's see
if
you can do it.
The first handful of Wednesdays went better than last Wednesday.
They're better.
Yeah.
Not last as good as today.
No, today was great. And, you know, I got that's a good question.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And then he paused and had to stew on it.
You want
to
hear it again?
Hear it again.
When you look at the Niners receivers between Juwan Jennings and Debo and Brandon Ayuk, who is the best man beater of the trio?
It's a great question. That's a tough one. I mean,
he's making noises. Like, that's a great question. And then he goes into his Kyle Shanahan. He's breathing hard.
Right.
He didn't know what to do. You got him.
That's a tough one.
You got him.
And again,
backed him into a corner and held his feet to the fire.
I'm gonna thank my parents for all their support growing up, and I do want to give you a little bit of a thank you as well, because one thing we've talked about off air as much as on air is how to ask a question, and that question was pretty short and pretty direct.
Yeah, just say it.
Just ask it.
Yeah, just ask. Especially with Greg.
For all you amateur podcasters out there, just ask the damn question.
Well, what did we learn last week? Greg does not want your 25-second question. He will start talking at 12 seconds, and if you're not done, you're done. That's the way it goes.
And he got me with one of those today.
Dog.
Yeah, I should have.
That's the way it goes.
Yep.
All right. So
anyway,
check this out. Check this out. Is this a coach doing what coaches do, which is they sit in front of the media and you ask them about the opponent, and then they sit there and go, well, my gosh, I don't even know how the hell we're going to win this game because they've got all the good players and every player at every position is just amazing, and I don't even know how the hell we're going to score a point or move the ball or do anything this week. And when they have the ball, my gosh, I have no idea how we're going to stop them. They'll probably get a first down on every play. And it's especially funny when you hear teams, like you'll be going to play Carolina, and they'll be like, look, they're dangerous. They got a good running back, got a good receiver, got a good did, right? Coaches do that. Or are they being sincere? So we heard, and now this was on the sideline, not in front of the media. Super Bowl last year, Brock Purdy started hot, and Spagnuolo was playing zone, and he was heard going to the other members of the staff, and we're like, we got to shake this up. He's picking us apart. He's absolutely killing our zone. And so they made some adjustments, and it got better. Brock still played okay in the game, but it got better. And obviously we know how the whole thing ended. So now Spagnuolo's had an entire game against Brock, and he's had many more games this year to start looking at film and getting ready for this one. And I want to play for you a couple of things that Spagnuolo said today about Brock Purdy. First of all, about how he handles the blitz.
Yeah, I mean, we're never going to go in the game and not blitz at all because we're fearful of it. But I think we do have to respect the fact that he knows exactly what to do with the football. To me, the most impressive thing is even if it wasn't getting it out quick on a blitz, he has a unique way of getting away from it. I just showed a play this morning where, I forget what team it was, but they brought quite a few people. He didn't blink. He didn't panic at all, and boom, and he was out of there. And I think he might have gained 2 yards or got the ball away. But that's a pretty good weapon for them to have to negate, you know, that part of our defense.
Okay, so we're gonna blitz, but we better be ready for the fact that he's really good against it. Okay.
Yep.
So that's one. But check this out. This is a more general answer. Steve Spagnuolo talking about Brock Purdy. Before we play that, I want to remind everyone that you're listening to 95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HC1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app. Twitch and YouTube powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer.